the action now.
I'm coming to get you.
Get away from her, you bitch.
The action now.
You've just been erased.
The name's Nukem, Duke Nukem, and now it's time for the Action Nerd. I love this guy.
Thank you for staying with a faithful listener. It's been a while since I've done an episode. Sadly, I gave a brief update a couple weeks ago. I've had a bunch of personal things happen. A close personal friend of mine and guest of the show, Jordan Boom Boom Brownload, sadly passed away. After he became my roommate, I lost him right after Thanksgiving. Been kind of hurtful. But today, you know, I got a new friend here, you know, new guest of the show. I have Alex Gilmore. How's it going, Alex?
Fine. How are you?
Not too bad, man. It's a nice day. It's a middle of the afternoon for me, which you are my first British guest from the UK. So.
Ah, nice. That's... Good to know. Good to be number one in something at least.
Yeah. You'll hear another thing. It's like Alex and I hooked up on the Gamezilla Media Discord, where I've been a member of that for a number of years, and I just put up on a familiar channel called The Last Action Podcast, which thankfully I was a guest on not too long ago. We recorded it on my 40th birthday, so the big 40 now. And what's that?
That's around not quite around the corner for me, but it's in the it's down the road.
It's part of it still hasn't quite hit me that I'm 40. There's other times where I wake up and I'm slowly getting out of bed going, oh, I'm 40. Okay. But,
how's your back?
Yeah. Definitely the back. I got, on the Discord and said, hey, I'm restarting my podcast up. Anybody wants to be a guest? And Alex was kind enough to hit me up. And today Alex brought the movie. We are talking about the 1988 classic Arnold Schwarzenegger film Red Heat. So what's your history with this movie, Alex?
Hilariously, it wasn't originally supposed to be Red Heat that my weird history with this is I was a Conan the Barbarian fan, so my aunt had taped Conan the Barbarian for me off TV, and one day I honestly can't remember how old I was. I was probably like 12, 13 roundabouts. And I go into the local market where I was living at the time. And there's this store which has a whole bunch of VHS tapes. And I'm browsing VHS tapes because I'm a bit of a shut-in of a child and I like to watch movies. And I find this VHS, which is a double pack of Conan the Destroyer and Conan and Red Heat. So naturally, I'm like, ooh, Conan the Destroyer. This is clearly another Conan movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm all in on this. So I go to the person and buy it, which is hilarious when you realize that VHS was a 18, and I was clearly not 18 at the time. But, you know, they're selling pre-owned VHS tapes for like £3 a pop. It's all good. So I buy that, go home, watch Conan the Destroyer. And it does that thing that VHS tapes used to do and keep going. And Red Heat started up afterwards. And I was like, hey, you know what? I've got nothing else better to do. And I'll watch it. And less than 5 minutes into the movie, I see, you know, boobs and, you know, being 13. And you see boobs and you keep watching. So...
Yep, I do remember those days. Coincidentally enough, you know, I'm like, oh, I've seen Red Heat. Well, come to find out, I've only seen the back half of Red Heat. So this was the first time in my memory that I've seen it all the way through. So there, here's the other first for me is, you know, seeing this movie from start to finish. Because I remember like the middle part, and when we get to that part in the discussing about it, I will say this is the part where I remember first watching it. And I'm like, okay, I'm watching it. I'm like, you know, this is Arnold back in the 80s. This is awesome, you know, where they have no unlimited ammo for their magazines or revolvers that they use in this movie. And I'm like, I remember those movies. I do remember it quite fondly. So, but all right, we're going to jump into the discussion here. The movie Red Heat was directed by Walter Hill. Walter Hill wrote it, and with Harry Kleiner and Troy Kennedy Martin. We have Arnold Schwarzenegger as Captain Ivan Danko, which for me, honestly, unless he's the Terminator, I just think of Arnold as Arnold. So that's how I'm going to be referring to him throughout the entire discussion of this movie.
I always remember when I watched it again at some other point when I was a teenager, my dad found it absolutely hilarious that an Austrian man was playing a Soviet Russian. So
yes, yeah, very true. Or how they had an American playing a Soviet Russian as well.
Oh yeah, because Victor, the bad guy.
Actually, he's an American, but he was a Georgian, so technically Soviet Georgian in this movie. So we got Jim Belushi, but in the movie he went by James Belushi as Art
and
Riznik.
Not John Belushi, as again my dad thought it was, because I distinctly remember this. My dad came in one time when I was watching it, and he's like, who's that? I was like, oh, it's James Belushi. And he's like, oh, didn't he die? And I was like, I don't know. And then for years, I genuinely thought James Belushi had died, like, at some point. And then I found out, no, it was his brother, John Belushi, who had died. So, yeah, so this was before you could go on the internet and Google, what, you know, information. So
yeah, funnily enough, it's Jim Belushi did, you know, eventually sitcoms in the early 2000s, and he kind of disappeared. And I found out part of the reason why is when certain states here in the United States legalized marijuana, he has one of the largest marijuana pot growing farms there is. And he's got a whole reality show about his life as a pot farmer. So I'm like, ah, okay. So he gave up acting and dedicated his life to pot. Gotcha. And yeah, we got Peter Boyle as Commander Lou Doyle, Donnelly. Ed O'Ross, who plays
he's Raymond's dad, isn't he?
Yes, Raymond's dad from Everybody Loves Raymond.
I knew I recognized him.
Yep, and it's like back in the day, we had Ed O'Ross as Victor Rostov, which they were like, oh, it's Victor Rostov, Victor Rosnavilia. I was like, okay, I'll just stick with Victor. We have Lawrence Fishburne as Lieutenant Stubbs, but I can't remember why, but back in the 80s when he first started acting, he went by Larry Fishburne. And then in the 90s, he's like, I'm going to get more prestigious and try for more of the better roles, so I'm going to go with Lawrence from that. So I remember
he looked really weird with hair. Wow. Okay. I was this was like, I think this was the second movie I ever saw him in, and the first one was The Matrix. So obviously I go back and watch this where he's like 10 years younger, slightly thinner, has hair, and it's just like it's a bit of a contrast for me. So I'm just like, oh wait, it's Morpheus, but he looks different and he's more of a douche. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you really want to get a big kick, check out Paul W.S. Anderson's Event Horizon, where he's a little transitioning between like the thinner Lawrence Fishburne to a bigger Lawrence Fishburne, but still with hair. So it's a bit of a shock there. And we have Gina Gershon as Kat Manzetti. And
I used to actually have I've literally only ever seen her in about like three films, but even now I still think she's hot.
Oh yeah, yeah, she's a very beautiful woman. She's been in a lot of things. There's the cult classic Showgirls, where she played a Las Vegas showgirl in that movie. She's done a lot of stuff.
I remember her from Face Off.
Yes, Face Off's the big one. She did the Stallone movie Drive, where I believe she played Stallone's ex-wife. And the last name I put on here, just because of who the actor is, he's a famous, that guy from the 80s and 90s. We got Byron James, who plays Streak in the movie. He kind of an informant, but, you know.
I knew
he's one of those guys.
He's
been in a lot of stuff. And every time I see him, I'm like, it's Byron James. Awesome. I love that guy. Sadly, he passed away not too long ago, but you know, it's always a joy to see him on set, stay or on screen, because you know he just gives it 110% when he's doing it, be it like with an American accent, being a total asshole, kind of like what he was doing in this, or in some movies where he's doing some weird accent of some sort, and you're like, what the hell is that accent? But he always put in 110% for. So, but all right, this movie had an estimated budget of $29 million, and it's the numbers I got were only in the U.S. and in Canada, because it's got an interesting release history. But in U.S. and Canada during its run, it made just under $35 million. So it made back its money, but it wasn't too big of a hit. Some people forget that this is kind of in Arnold's filmography. They definitely forget like Byron James was in it, or Jim Belushi, or Peter Boyle. And it just seeing this movie, I'm like, oh right, that's right. These guys were in this movie had a bigger career.
Part of the reason I picked it was it's one of those movies that like you have to be deep into Arnie's filmography to know about it, because I've got a friend who's like a casual Arnie fan, and he's like, wait, which one's Red Heat? And he's like, it's the one where he's playing a Soviet, and he's like, which one? And he's like, it's a buddy cop. And he's like, no, I don't think I've seen that one. And he's like, oh okay, well check it out, it's good.
Well, I was a friend of the show, I told him I was doing my first recording of the year, coming back from a 9-month hiatus, almost 10-month hiatus, sadly, what I was doing. He was like, oh. And then he stopped and wait, Red Heat or Red Dawn? And I'm like, it's Red Heat, the one with Arnold. Oh, okay, you accidentally put in Red Dawn. I was like, that's my bad. But eventually I'll be talking about those movies down the road.
Remake or both, or
yeah, it's like both. Eventually I'll get to both of them. I'm one of the weird people. I liked the remake, but main reason why is if you watch certain parts of the remake with Helmsworth, he's like, oh, they're talking about how the Chinese invaded Washington State. Then there's two large cities in Washington State, Seattle and Spokane. I live in Spokane. And if you notice, like the police captain dad, his car says Spokane Police Department, and they were originally going to film it here in Spokane, but a production company at the time asked for too much money for the unionized workers here, and the studio just said, well, screw that, and they up and moved to Detroit and built parts of Spokane in Detroit with that extra money. Well, it's not the first time we've had issues with movies. Sam Jackson movie, Home of the Brave, was filmed here in Spokane, but one of the issues they had was the studio was here in Spokane was asking for too much money at times, so they would actually up and leave and come back as a contract negotiation, and it was quite interesting and funny. But this movie, you know, sorry for the side quest, everybody, but the movie opening weekend just made a little over $8 million, which is kind of surprising because it's an Arnold movie. And back in the 80s, Arnold was one of the action kings, one of the action gods. This I believe, came out right around the time Die Hard came out. And, you know, there was the whole one-upmanship between Stallone and Arnold during this whole period of time. That's why we got, like, oh, Arnold did Kindergarten Cop. Stallone did Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, which that's a funny little story on that one. But here's the interesting thing about the release dates. I have four release dates for this movie, because first one was it premiered in Beverly Hills, Hollywood, and or California, was June 14th, 1988. And then the rest of the country got it June 17th of 1988. Well, it was released in the UK January 13th, 1989. And then the final release date that I have here is in Russia. It was released July 17th, 1992, which is kind of understandable because the Soviet Union collapsed in 91.
Something I read was that they actually were able to film bits of it in Russia, which seemed kind of surprising for the time.
It was, but they didn't have permission to. They didn't have permits or anything. So whenever they show parts in Russia, that's why it's like a kind of a quick blink in you, because if they would have been caught by law enforcement, they probably would have been arrested at the time because they didn't have permission.
Oh, that makes
sense. That's why, like, one of the scenes at the end of the movie is like a blink and you miss it kind of thing. But so the synopsis is that a tough Russian policeman is forced to partner up with a cocky Chicago police detective when he's sent to Chicago to apprehend a Georgian drug lord who killed his partner and fled the country. In a nutshell, that's the movie. Bye, everybody. No, but no, it's interesting. It's like some little synopsis that'll be like, oh, here's the entire movie in just a sentence or two. And then there's some of them where it's like a paragraph you got to read, but. Getting into it, we start off, the movie starts off in a gym. Like, you see a guy shoveling coal into a furnace, which I don't know if that's how the Soviets used to do their gyms or not, but it was a co-ed gym. Like, you turn around, you see, like Alex had mentioned, you see naked women in the pool or in the sauna, and we see Arnold show up, and he's wearing, like, basically a G-string towel. It's a towel that covers the front end and ties around in the back, and that's it.
Every
man is pretty much wearing that towel, and part of me is like, I tried to get the tush from who's been on Last Action Podcast, but he never got a hold of me. I think he probably would have gone, oh, there's actual tush in this movie.
An awful lot.
Oh yeah. And it's just interesting because you see Arnold walk in, and this is like one of two times in the film where you see Arnold walk into a room and everything basically stops. Everybody starts looking at him and staring him down like, I'm gonna hurt you type thing. So it's kind of establishing already that Arnold's a tough guy and he's a cop and these are basically criminals. But he's even interrogated by a couple of guys, which one of them was, I believe, Sven Ole Thorsen, who was Arnold's stunt double in a bunch of his earlier films. But
he's in a bunch of his like early movies. He was actually the guy with the big hammer in Conan the Barbarian.
He was.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, him and Arnold are friends, so it's understandable to see Flynn in this movie, because in the movie, he's the guy with the beard and a scar on his cheek. And while they're questioning, they're like, oh, you're not a foundry worker. You don't work in the factories. Your hands are too smooth. So we're going to actually see if you're as tough as you say you are. They put a burning stone that's been for a sauna into his palm. And Arnold, still with that stone in his hand, beats the hell out of these guys. And he's questioning them, going, where's Victor? Where's Victor? And one happens to mention that Victor's in this one cafe. And then we get the whole title sequence. Pretty much any actor or actress or anybody with this production in the opening title sequence that had either an N or an R I noticed how they kind of wrote it the way the Russians would have had it, which was backwards.
I love that as well. It's clearly like, you know, not correct, but it looks cool.
No, it's not. It's, you know, back in the 80s, you know, not a whole lot was known about because of the Cold War and everything and the Soviet Union. So people were like, we just want to, you know, poke the bear a little bit, see what happens. I believe that's the whole concept of why they did it. But, you know, we see Arnold and his partner slash friend who they didn't really even mention his name at all. So, but his partner and friend is telling him, oh, you know, all the other fellow police officers, they nicknamed you the Iron Jaw. Only time, and I'm like, oh, that's understandable. I look at Arnold's jaw. It's like this big hulking piece of metal because, you know, he's coming back off the bodybuilder stage of his life. And like I said, this is the other scene where he walks in and people are in the cafe and he's in full uniform this time with a bandage over his hand. And everybody just stops and starts looking at him, where even the guy behind the bar goes, everything's good, officer. We're just a cafe. Everything's good. And
shady stuff here.
Yeah, nothing shady, which it just looks like the old West type bar style where the lawman walks in and it just all stops because there's nothing but shadiness going on. That's the reason why they all stop.
I did like the guy on the piano. I have no idea what he was singing about, but it just sounded like nice little beat, and it was nice.
Yeah, that's the only one doing anything is the piano man playing away at the piano. But I also noticed his eyes were like closed shut, like I'm not seeing anything, so I can't be a witness to anything type of vibe going on right there. We get Arnold meeting Victor for the first time on camera, and Victor is saying, oh, you Soviets, you Russians pick on us in Georgia, the country. We're just innocent Georgians. Nothing's wrong with us. And a guy kind of faces off with Arnold. Arnold just beats the hell out of him right there and grabs and looks like he snaps the dude's leg off, but it's a prosthetic leg, and just takes out a cap and starts dumping out cocaine.
I remember the first time I saw that scene, and I genuinely thought he had actually done something to the guy's leg. I was just like, oh my God. I was like, oh, I even, like, you know, when you do that thing where like you grab whatever part of your anatomy you see them like injure. And it's like, I literally remember grabbing my leg. I was like, oh my God. And it's like, oh, it's a prosthetic. It's kind of okay now.
Like I said, this was the first time from front to beginning to end of the movie that I've seen it. And I was like, oh, did he just, okay, it's a fake leg. Oh, thank God. That's what my thought was last night. And we get our first big shootout of the movie where the cops are shooting at Victor and Victor's brother and a bunch of their gang members. And Arnold ends up killing Victor's brother after his partner had shot him in the leg. After he runs into a bunch of cops, turns around, and there's Arnold pointing out this huge desert eagle that he's got in the movie, points it right out at him. And instead of giving up, he tries to shoot Arnold, and Arnold just guns him down. See Victor kill Arnold's friend.
You would have thought the brother would have been like, right, okay, so there's a whole bunch of cops behind down the stairs. There's a big hulking man in front of me with a big massive gun in front of me. What should I do? It's like, but I guess it being, you know, the Soviet Union, I guess they probably have different rules there. So, yeah.
It's like, so I know there are some countries, especially in Southern Asia, that are like, oh, you have this amount of drugs. Well, guess what? You don't go to jail for life. You have the death penalty. I know that's so. Could have been that way in Russia as well at the time. But I think it just adds a little bit more to the drama where Arnold is this stone cold tough guy cop and just blows away the bad guy. Yeah. And we see Victor getting into a gunfight with the cops, and he's stopped by Arnold's friend and partner. And this
is his name. I can't remember if they mention if his name's Yuri or not.
I couldn't quite see a name. Some of the names in this movie, they didn't actually mention it till way further into the movie. Because little spoiler for the thing is they don't mention Gina Gershon's name until the very end. And so throughout, whenever she's part of it, I just refer to her as Gina.
Yeah.
But, you know, Victor has a gun that comes out of his sleeve, just a little hideout gun, and just starts shooting away at Arnold's partner, which I'm like, okay, if you guys have listened to the Last Action podcast, I am a self-admitted gun guy. I know for a fact that gun that he has only holds one round at a time. And he's just going like 3-4 rounds at a, I'm like, ah, oh, that's right. It's the 80s. Unlimited ammo was a thing back then, especially in movies. So I'll let him have that.
You see, that's actually then, kind of like really fascinating because for me, obviously, like, you don't really get guns over here in the UK. So I don't know any better. I'm literally just like, oh, so I just assume they could probably hold like literally however many rounds he shot in that. So I was just that's fine.
That's like a big bore Derringer handgun. It's like a one shot. You got to actually unload the gun, open it up, breach it into two pieces, and then load another bullet in yourself. And I was just like, okay, I'll cut him some slack there because it was the 80s. Gotta give him a little break.
So would it have been practical, like, at all to do the hide it in your sleeve thing? Like in real life?
There's very, very different ways you could do it. Like the movie Taxi Driver actually did it very well, showing it off. The show Justified had a character that had that type of weapon.
Yeah,
but he actually says there's so many things that can go wrong. It's like you got to keep the mechanism that slides it to your hand well lubricated and very taken care of, and there's just so much that could go wrong with it. And it was that type of thing. It's thankfully, you know, I just looked it up. I was wrong. It was actually capable of having two rounds at a time, but instead of one. But the way they had it look like in the gun, I was like, is he shooting a little 12 gauge out of his hand? But they even mention it on Internet Movie Firearm Database that, oh, it acts like a 12 gauge, but it's not. It's actually just a small pistol.
You need it to sound cool as well.
yeah, I did. But we got, so we find out Victor and two of his gang members, they flee to the U.S. They're like, we're done. We're out of here. Russia's burnt for us. We can go to the U.S. where the Russians can't get to us. And that's where we meet Art, Jim Belushi, and Lawrence Fishburne, and Art's partner. And how we meet them is they're about to do a raid on a gang for, they don't actually say why, they're just like, oh, it's a gang, we're gonna go bust them up. And you see Jim Belushi sitting in the car, he goes, oh, look at this, it's the Fun Bag Patrol. And he's,
I was like, yeah, he would definitely go to his HR department if he was saying this nowadays.
Nowadays, yes. It's like talking about how big a woman's chest is and going, do you think she paid for those? No, those are natural. Those got to be natural. She couldn't have paid for those.
That was a homegirl.
And yeah, it's like Lawrence Fishburne's just like, please shut up. And this is where, like you said, he's kind of a douche throughout the entire movie. He's a bit of a dick towards Jim Belushi the entire film, and kind of towards Arnold as well. And he's a higher up. He's a lieutenant. He's one rank higher than Jim Belushi's character. And they're like, oh, we're going to do a raid on the Clean Heads, is what they called the gang. And Jim Belushi's like, oh, God, I hate the Clean Heads. I hate going to their stuff. Shit always goes down that we don't expect. I hate it. And well, they get in. These guys have drugs all over the table, guns everywhere. And quite literally, right before we meet Jim Belushi, you see the guy at the table, the leader of this little gang of clean heads, had a meeting with Victor at a phone booth, where it was kind of clever. Victor was at one end of the phone booth and next to it was another one, and they make a deal to purchase drugs, and they hand off half a $100 bill. And we happen to see, but yeah, it's like we see this guy, he gets arrested, and Jim Belushi's kind of searching around, and a dude just starts wailing at them with a 12 gauge, just pumping away. And they're like, okay, we got the two guys secure. Let's go after this third one. And as the guy with the shotgun is trying to kill Lawrence Fishburne and Jim Belushi's partner, Jim Belushi's able to sneak up to him, put his gun up to his head. And I just felt it was way out of character, because I've seen Jim Belushi in comedies. I've seen him in his sitcoms just running up and going, freeze, motherfucker. Okay, it's the 80s, and, you know, Jim Belushi had a career. And I've seen some of his stuff. I'm like, oh, that's right. This was before he was more family friendly. And we're also told that back in the Soviet Union, Victor was arrested. We don't see him get arrested, but
interesting thing about that. If you actually see the scene where he's waiting around to meet the clean heads, and obviously they don't turn up because they're obviously arrested. He gets back in the car and he drives off. You actually see their car run a red light. And I think that's what they got arrested for.
They were pulled over for running a red light, but arrested for not having a driver's license.
Oh yeah. But you see him run the red light, and yeah, like you said, like they get pulled over, and but it's actually just interesting, because I only noticed that for the first time when I rewatched the movie for this. I was just like, oh yeah, they actually do run the red light. I was like, oh, never noticed that before.
It's like, yeah, I didn't even notice that when I watched it, because for me, I watched it last night, and I'm like, okay, so yeah, so when the clean heads went to their place and ended up getting busted, Victor had just gotten busted during this whole time as well. And so the Soviets, they send Arnold over to go escort him from Chicago back to Moscow. Extradition, you know, this was during the time where, like I said, it's like not a whole lot of people realized what was going on with Russia. So there was a bunch of political tension going on. Like, Arnold meets Art and his partner at the airport, and Art just goes, I bet you $10 this guy doesn't even speak English. And Arnold's going, yes, yes. Where'd you learn how to speak English? In the army in Kiev. And I'm like,
oh yeah, like chicken Kiev.
I'm like, part of me is like, that's a very thick Austrian accent for a Russian, but okay. I'm like, you got to remember, this was the 80s, and they thought that having a Swedish guy playing the Soviet boxer in Rocky IV was a good idea. So I'm like, all right, well, I've got to cut him some slack. They also...
European, it's fine.
But yeah, it's like Arnold is like, oh, take me to the hotel where Victor stayed. And the cops are, Art and his partner are like, well, if you're short on cash, we can take you somewhere else. We can requisition money. They're trying to be nothing but helpful to him. And he ends up getting the same room Victor had, which is a key point later in the movie. But Arnold goes to the police station to get Victor, the commander and the assistant are watching, and the commander's assistant makes fun of Arnold's uniform right there, and just to show, oh, like, kind of the tension at the time, the, oh, he's Russian and we're Americans, go America. And you see Art playing chess right there, and Arnold looks down and goes, you'll be dead in two moves, play this, do this move. Because back in the day, you know, really famous chess players used to be from Russia. And Arnold's talking with the commander, Commander's got fish and he's got all this other stuff. And he's like, oh, it's to help with the stress. And how do you Russian Soviets deal with stress in Russia? And this line made me laugh. It was one of the few lines that made me laugh during this entire movie. I even told my girlfriend afterwards, and she agreed that the word vodka was the best answer to deal with stress.
It is so. And it's also because it's his deadpan delivery for it. It's like, how do you deal with it? It's like, vodka.
Yeah, exactly. It's just deadpan, no expression. I was like, yep, that's a great answer. When, you know, we see Victor seeing Arnold for the first time, because you find out that 6 months had gone past from the beginning of the movie to this point in time. So, like, Arnold's friend was killed. We're quite literally, after they show Arnold's friend in the beginning of the movie get killed, he's instantly being buried right there. It felt like almost same day. Oh, he died. We're going to bury him right now. But it'd been a 6 month time period had gone by, and Victor is just pissed by seeing Arnold. And like they do, you give your any personal effects that were on you when you're arrested, they're given back to you or given to the custodial officer who's taking you in, and they find a little red key. And Art's like, well, what's the key for? Maybe you should ask him. So where's the key going for? And in Russian, Victor just happens to say, you can go kiss your mother's ass. And Art gets mad, tries to attack him, and they separate him. And he's like, well, how would you think I would react? He told me to go fuck my mother. I'm like, no, he didn't. He told you to kiss your mom's ass. That's my whole thought. And this whole time,
I think something I always found funny was that, like, they're always like, oh yeah, the Russians are so, like, uptight. Da, 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 da. And then it's like, and then he just flies off the handle when, like, he's insulted. And it's just like, is this a Jim Belushi thing, or is this sort of like a commentary on like how Americans deal with stuff? I was like, I don't know, but it seemed like an interesting.
I think it was more of a Jim Belushi thing, because, you know, depending on who it is, if you insult their mother, some guys I know would be like, yeah, you're right. Okay. Or that, and some of them would get offended and try to do it, but it, mostly flying off the handle like that, I think, was a Jim Belushi thing.
Okay.
And here's an interesting part of the movie is, like, we see an armored truck, and during this armored truck being pulled up, you hear, like, this really intense music kicking in. And you're like, okay, some stuff's going to go on with music. the intense 80s, like, something bad's about to happen music, which totally gives away that anybody and everybody in this armored vehicle is a bad guy. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep watching. I'm going to keep going. And they show Art's like, hey, I'll catch up with you guys later. End of shift. I'm done. Bye. And the entire, I will give it this. His partner the entire time is trying to be such a nice guy to Arnold throughout this entire part. And, the guys from the armored truck, disguised as armored security guys, are actually the clean heads. They attack and free Victor. Victor's searching Arnold for the key, but you find out that it was dropped before that. And while during the struggle, Art's partner pulls out his gun to try to shoot one of the guys and gets killed during this escape. And that's when Art comes running around the corner after, I think he bought a lottery ticket and a quick snack, and that was what he was doing, comes running out, starts chasing after Victor and all the bad guys, and he just completely loses it because they jump into the back of an old station wagon and drive off. And Arnold just slowly, you see him slightly losing consciousness, reaching out barely, and just grabs the key and hides it. And he's stuck in the hospital with a concussion.
I mean, to be fair, if I'd had that beaten that Arnie had taken, I probably would probably have more than a concussion. So it just shows how, you know, massive of a, like, how, you know, how much he can take a beating. And I'm just like, yeah, I'd probably be in a coma or something.
Yeah, my ass would have probably been like, I got a couple broken bones with a concussion. I'm you know, I just found out that I'm about 5 to 10 pounds heavier than Jake Gyllenhaal is at the moment for his new movie, because for the new Roadhouse movie, and I'm like, oh god, I need to lose some weight.
I'm assuming it's not in muscle though.
Not mine. No.
I was going to say, it's like, that's impressive. But it's like, I guess it depends on the percentage of muscle to.
Yes. It's, and Arnold, you know, back then was nothing but muscle. So I'll give it to that. And while, you know, Art's talking with the lieutenant in the hospital going, oh, one of the guys was shot by your partner before he was killed. He's in a coma. He's in intensive care right now. And they're like, we think it was the clean hits. Not the ones that we just arrested yesterday. No, we think it might be them, because the judge kicked their case out because of an illegal search warrant. Which I'm like, yeah, I've heard stories where I actually knew a guy who was arrested for littering at the local airport on a private road, and they tried to charge him with possession of marijuana about 15 years ago, but because the officer stated he went there to go search for people who'd been littering, he got off from the drug possession charges whatsoever, and just didn't even get community service or anything. Him and his buddies were like, yeah, we just went out there to go hang out. We weren't littering. We weren't doing anything. That's why our car was filthy, is we threw all the stuff into our car. So you got to be very careful with what you put down on arrest records or search warrants, or you can get violent people like this kicked right back out on the street.
Again, well, that's interesting. I mean, yeah.
And it's like, Arnold's being yelled at by two guys from the Soviet consulate, going, Moscow's embarrassed by what you've done. You need to report back to Moscow immediately.
And when you step foot in Moscow. Even as a kid, I'm just like, he got the shit kicked out of him. It's like, you know, it's like, could you guys not be, you know, a bit sympathetic? It's like, he got jumped by, like, what was it, like, five people? It's like, you know, cut him some slack.
Well, okay, it's like, I grew up around the U.S. military, so I know certain things, like, if anything like this happened, yeah, they're going to check on you, and then they're going to rip you a new one. It's just the style of, like, a military hierarchy. I will say this, if you had a concussion like Arnold supposedly had, you wouldn't have done 90% of what he had done at the end of this, or through the rest of this movie. Because he dresses up in a different suit instead of his uniform. And even Art comes in and goes, what, no uniform? I'll work undercover from now on.
Yes.
And he's...
Okay, here's something I've been wanting to know for years, and I've never figured out. Who is Gumby? I like, because Jim Belushi says, you look like Gumby. And I'm like, I have no concept as to who Gumby is.
Okay, Gumby used to be a kids show here in the U.S. The old style claymation kids show. He was a kind of like a greenish stick figure guy with his best friend, who was a horse named Pokey. So
this sounds like, well, I mean, I don't know. Do you know, you wouldn't know about Morph, would you? Because like over here, we used to have a claymation show called Morph.
No, I wouldn't know anything about that. I actually lived in Europe.
So it seems like we all had like our own claymation like kids show, like just specifically to like where we were, because we also had like Pingu as well.
Yeah, it's like we had so Gumby was a claymation character that, you know, was popular back in the day. I actually remember watching old Gumby stuff like on Cartoon Network and other different stuff as a kid. Just for you, Alex, In our chat, I just sent you a picture of what Gumby looked like, so.
Okay, right, let's have a look at that.
So yeah, you'll see why. It's because the suit that Arnold wears in the movie is the same color as Gumby was. That's why he was being called Gumby. And it's just funny. It's like after that, like you see this big ass Desert Eagle, and when you're traveling, you're not supposed to have firearms, even if from one country to another. And he's like, "How'd you get that through customs?" "I have diplomatic immunity." Well, that's one of the ways you can get stuff past customs. If you have diplomatic immunity or a diplomatic pouch for the U.S., you could do that. And anything and everything you have can't be searched and seized. And so that's
I mean, it seemed crazy. But like at the same time, I'm like, oh yeah, the 80s, you could get away with a lot of stuff, couldn't you? So it's just like,
Well, I know back in the 80s, like Die Hard is a good example. You know, he's seen on the plane with his gun on him, and he's like, "I'm a cop." Back then, if you showed a badge, they're like, "Oh, you're good." Nowadays, you can't do that.
Yeah.
there's so many rules and regulations now just to even check for. Example, in the U.S., if you want to fly with a gun, you have to check it in with the airline check or baggage claims. You got to check it in with them and do all sorts of legal loops and everything and do it that way just to get it onto the plane. So this is the part where, you know, we get Arnold is like, "I'm going to go take care of this myself." And Art is basically just told, "You're his babysitter. Go take care or help him out. Make sure he doesn't get into trouble." And Arnold just goes, "Take me back to the hotel." "What am I, your taxi cab?" "Yes." And I'm like, that was another part that kind of made me smile. I'm like, okay, just the deadpan delivery of Arnold with some of these one-liner quips that he does.
And the thing is, they're natural as well, because like something, because I was noticing that as well. I was like, you know, these lines are funny because they sound real. They don't sound like, you know, they've stopped the movie for a couple of seconds. Because I've noticed that there's quite a few movies nowadays where they'll have this, you know, awkward forced like comedy bit, and I'm just like, they'll stop the movie to just have like a comedy line or something, and I'm just like, that. Doesn't make it funny, that makes it worse, because you've literally stopped the movie, whereas something mm-hmm. like that is sort of like it flows naturally into it. It's like, "What am I, your taxi driver?" "Yes." That's funny.
Exactly.
Because it's also something that, you know, you could see yourself doing to like one of your friends or something. So it's just like
exactly, like nowadays it's forced, but back then they're like, "We're gonna throw in some subtle jokes in here." And Arnold, that's when Arnold's like, I'm not going back without having Victor in custody. And the lieutenant goes up to the commander, goes, "Is this a good idea?" Well, you know, Arnold's a loose cannon. He's Russian, so we can just go, it's a Russian thing. Art is a good cop, but he's a bit of a fuck up. So there's really no downside. Like, if there's anything that happens, nothing will blow back onto us. Is what he's basically saying. And we get there. And it's like, we get there. And this is the only part of the movie where Byron James is in. And he's already in an interrogation room going, "I'm not telling you guys anything whatsoever." And Jim Belushi tries planting drugs on him in his pocket. And this is after Jim Belushi tried explaining to Arnold Miranda rights here in the U.S. But I guess they don't have those in Russia. I don't even think they have those in the UK.
Well, they've got like, you know, rights in the sense that, you know, if they want a lawyer, they can get a lawyer, and you can't, you know, physically attack them or anything. So I think we've got some variation on it.
But well, in this part, you know, Arnold just full on breaks the dude's Miranda rights, grabs his hand, starts breaking his fingers right there. And the guy's like, "Okay, you got to go talk to the leader of the Clean Heads who's in prison." And so they go to the prison.
Like, what else can you tell me? It's like, ah, swear on my balls, I don't know.
Yep. And it's like, that's the only time we see Byron James. And I'm like, oh, this, it was actually kind of cool seeing him in this movie. But yeah, we go to the prison and Arnold meets up with the leader of the Cleanheads. And he's like, well, if Russia, if you didn't tell us this, you'd wake up in bed with your balls in a glass of water next to your bed. And he's like, what do I need my balls for? Come on, I'm in prison. Well, then you'd wake up. It's like, your eyes would be in it. And he goes, what would I need my eyes for? And flips up his sunglasses and he shows that he's blind. So, but he's willing to help him out just a little bit, gives him some information. And they go looking for Victor. Well, that's when they also find out Victor's been in contact with Gina Gershon, who's a dance instructor. And the main reason why we find out that he's been in contact with her is she was his kind of his contact after he was arrested. He asked her to go get his passport from his hotel room, half of the $100 bill. And she was like, he trusts me. Well, why does he trust you? I'm his wife. Because that's one way to get into the U.S. is if you marry a U.S. citizen over a certain amount of time, you get your green card. You get access to be in the country.
Do they still have that?
Yeah, it's just nowadays it takes a lot longer. I think the example is like you got to be together to officially get your green card from a marriage after 2 years.
Okay.
So like a buddy of mine, his wife just immigrated from Canada. She filled out all the paperwork, got her green card, and like a week after that, they got married. So, but that's tough. Still, it still happens. It's just a lot more regulated. Well, after this is a part that made me, another one of the parts that made me smile was, Art's like, well, I guess we're going to have to do a stakeout. And don't worry, you go sit in the car. I'll get us food. I'll get us something from the four food groups, you know, hamburger, french fries, coffee, and donuts. And I was like, yeah, that does it. That's almost like the
typical, like, cop, like, food response that you could give. It's like, as soon as he said donuts, I was just like, yeah, that is literally the most stereotypical, like, response ever.
Well, back in the day, it's like, the reason why they were like, oh, cops and donuts is because donut shops would stay open practically 24/7. So cops would go in there, get food or get coffee during the night shift, or if they're doing breaks, that's the only place that was open at the time. So that's where the stereotype of cops and donuts came from. When I heard this line,
so there was like an actual reason for it. Okay.
Yeah. But when I heard this line, I was like, oh, it made me think of the Rucker Hauer line from the movie Split Second, going, oh, yeah, no, I live on a diet of chocolate, coffee, and anxiety. And I'm like, yeah, I can see it. And, well, you know, Arnold's like, okay, give me the keys to the car. No, I'm not going to let you drive a police regulation vehicle. There's so much paperwork that I'd have to fill out if anything happened.
I'm going to have to fill out a tire.
Exactly. And he was like, well, if she runs off, I need to chase after her. Fine, here's the keys. And there's this guy who comes up with a baseball bat, goes, hey, you can't park here. I live here. This is my parking spot. And Arnold just goes, do you know Miranda? No, I don't know the bitch. And he just pops him in the face and knocks the dude out. And you see Arnold come up. I just thought it was funny. Art walks right up, sees him on the ground, and just like, okay, whatever. And he's like, okay, what's up with the shithead on the sidewalk? Oh, he lives here. Okay, I'll leave it to that.
Yeah, I love that line as well. It's just like, because he's clearly like, there was always this thing in my head where it's like, does he think there's more to that, or he just can't be arsed, or he's genuinely taking that at face value because, you know, it's Chicago and they have, you know, people on the streets. So it's just like,
It's like, I think it's like everybody, it's just throwing in stereotypes from the time period. I've never been to Chicago myself. I've been to other big cities, but not Chicago. It's like during this, you know, Jim Belushi's putting all the stuff like the coffee and everything, and Arnold sees Gina Gershon jump into a cab and he just starts chasing after her right away. And, I love the part in Jim Belushi. She's like, no. Oh, oh God, I just burnt my balls. The coffee's so hot. I boiled them. It looks like I pissed myself too. Oh, I part of it, I think some of the humor in this movie was justified, but other parts, I think it was kind of forced when they were like, oh, we got Jim Belushi, who's a funny guy. We're going to give him like the funny lines to say.
Is it, for me, that line's, I think that line is sort of like doing like teetering like on the edge, because I'm like, to be fair, I there have been instances where I have knocked like stuff onto my trousers and it has looked like I've pissed myself, and there has been other instances where I have knocked over like a hot cup of like, talking about stereotypes, knocking over a cup of tea onto myself as well, and it's been really hot as well. So I have experienced both instances of what he's dealing with at separate times. So it tracks for me. So I'm like, yeah, you know, it's funny.
Yeah, it's like, well, during this whole police chase, we get Arnold going, oh, they're like, so you guys have drugs going, or Russia's so good, why do you have such a big drug problem? I think the Chinese had the best example of dealing with the drug problem. What's that? They got all the drug dealers and drug addicts, put them up in a public square, and shot them in the head. Politicians wouldn't like that here. Well, you'd shoot them first. I was like, yeah, that's probably how people, even to this day, are feeling. Was like, if you got rid of the politicians.
I didn't find that line as it was kind of funny when I watched it as a kid, but it's funnier now because obviously, you know, my understanding of politics is marginally better than it was when I was a kid. So yeah.
And then they show up and Gina Gershon, like, they lose her in a parking structure. A car pulls up and it's the clean heads. They're all sitting there, standing there with guns. And they're like, well, we're just here for peace talks. Victor's down that way. He wants to talk to you. No guns, no whatsoever. We're just here to ensure that everything is good and copacetic and peaceful. But we need your guns. Chicago police officer never relinquishes his weapon. And this part made me laugh my head off. Was when they chamber the shotguns and the rifles, and he's like, oh, here you go. Automatically just hands over his weapon. And this is the part of the movie where I remember exactly seeing it from this part on. So, like, the first half of the movie, I had no recollection whatsoever of this. Majority of the part of this movie after the scene, I do remember. I'm like, okay, this is the part that I have seen. Because in the U.S., we've had there's been times on local cable channels I've been like, oh, Red Heat, Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Raw Deal with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm like, oh, it's been a while since I've seen those. And then I'm like, I don't remember this part at all when I'm watching it. But, you know, Arnold talks with Victor, and Art's like, hey, I'll go with you. Oh, no, you have your own job. You're the hostage. You're the reason why that's got to keep him from behaving. So he's like, oh, great. Just stand there with a gun right directly in his ear. And he's like, okay, I'll sit. Take your time, buddy. Don't hurry, basically. And Victor and Arnold are talking. Victor wants the key to this mysterious key that only Arnold seems to have now. And he's like, just give me the key. I'll pay you more than you'll make the rest of your life in working for the police. The rest of your life, I'll do that. Arnold basically, no, I'm going to take you in. Well, you can't do that right now. You don't have your gun. And Victor basically just walks right off. And Arnold gets back to Art. They get their guns back and they're driving off, going to the hospital because they got word that the guy that Art's partner had shot is out of a coma. He's conscious and everything's all good. Well, you see Gina Gershon and another one of Victor's henchmen from Russia that he came to the U.S. jump into a car and they drive to the hospital. The guy dresses up in drag as a female nurse and injects an air bubble into this guy's IV drip. Silences all the machines so nobody can hear the machines beeping, giving the alert that this guy's dying, flatline, come save his ass. They get there, they're like, oh, come on, don't play dead with us. And they're like, he's not playing, he's dead. Oh, shit. And they were like,
that was another nurse that we just bumped into. Kind of funny. I don't know why, it's clearly just my sense of humor. It's like, don't play dead. Oh, he's dead. It's like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And well, they get into a foot chase, and Art's about to shoot this guy, this nurse, or what they think is a female nurse. And Gina just pushes a cart in the way and knocks him over. Arnold comes by, just blows him away with this big ass hand cannon of a Desert Eagle that he's got, and chases after Gina, who he just lets go. He like pushes her out of the way, shoots a lock, and let her. He's like, "Go, just get out of here." And
I think it's cool because it kind of shows that he's not, you know, completely like, you know, mission only sort of thing, because it does show that, you know, he does actually, you know, has a human side as well. Because I guess you could argue up to this point he's literally just been like, my job is to get Victor, and that is all I care about. And this one scene kind of shows that he actually does, you know, have a heart, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. He, you know, I gotta agree, he's got a it shows, because he's like, Victor's got other women in other countries, what makes you so special? It's like, I just don't want anybody to get hurt. And he's like, oh, she's actually a genuine person. Moves her out, lets her go. And that's when we see Art bent over on his stomach. He's like, I don't know, I got a tetanus shot 14 years ago, I don't know why I need another one. And he just gets jabbed. He's like, what was in that cement? God. And the commander and the lieutenant are like, where the hell did you get the gun? Arnold, he had it. He's Russian. What do you expect? I didn't give it to him. And the commander is just...
And it's another cool scene, which kind of like further like humanizes Arnie. And like, he's like, oh yeah, Jim Belushi didn't know about it. And it's like, well, give me your gun. And it's like, so he shows that he's covered, like, even though Jim Belushi obviously knew about the gun, he's like, he's covering for him to be like, yeah, he didn't know about the gun. It's like, I snuck it in.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he's covering, like you said, this is a buddy cop film, and it's basically after Jim Belushi's partner was killed and they start working together, he's like, I have to protect my partner type mentality. Yeah. And, so the commander tells Art that he was like, yeah, it's like, you're going back to Russia. Give me your gun. You're going back to Moscow. Art, you're writing a desk for the rest of your life, basically. And he tells Lawrence Fishburne, he's like, I was wrong about the downside, and just walks off.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm going to have a heart attack if I stay.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he was complaining about all the stress stuff, because he was like he was really close to a bypass surgery is what he said. And he's just like, oh God. They get into the car and Arnold's like, I need a gun. I'm not giving you a gun. I need a gun. Fine. And opens up a glove box and has a 44 Magnum revolver right there. He goes, here, that's the most powerful handgun in the world. And Arnold goes, this model from Russia is the most powerful handgun in the world. Well, that's the one Dirty Harry uses. Who's Dirty Harry? And they just drive off.
Is it actually the world's most powerful handgun? Because, like, I know next to nothing about guns, so I'm just genuinely curious.
Honestly, me personally, I'm not a revolver guy. I'm a semi-automatic weapon guy. Like, you could have... You give me like the gun Martin Riggs uses for a Lethal Weapon, and I could take that thing apart, put it back together, no ands, ifs, or buts, and I enjoy it. But there are caliber weapons that are slightly bigger. There's the, if you're a Guy Ritchie fan, like the movie Snatch explains it, Vinnie Jones goes, oh, See, your gun says replica on the sign, and mine says Desert Eagle .50. That's a 50 caliber. That's a 50 caliber handgun. That thing will kill a semi truck, and the bullet will still go.
Damn.
So yeah, that's an anti-material round. So like, if you want to take down a armored vehicle or aircraft, that's the weapon you want to use is a 50 caliber. I do not recommend it. I don't want people thinking, oh, Shane's now going do this. No, I just know things about guns growing up around the military. I have had friends in law enforcement and I've learned a thing or two. But in that, you know, we also get this kind of the stereotypical cop bonding scene. Art's, they're in a diner and Art's just filling out all this paperwork. He's like, oh, you got to fill this out for this. You got to fill this out for this. And they're talking and he's like, you got any family? No. Wife? No. Was your dad a cop? No, he was in the army. And he died. What about your mom? She died when I was very young. Your grandparents? Fighting Nazis. Girlfriend? No. Ever? Yes.
and again, it's just a little scene which kind of just shows that, you know, it kind of, again, sort of like shows that Artie is, you know, a person and not like a machine. He's like,
yeah, I will say the first half of this movie just shows Arnold being like the Soviet Russian machine, like all business, nothing. And then right after, you know, he meets Gina Gershon, I feel he's like opens up more and shows his humanity. And it's like, he was like, yeah. And Art happens to go, yeah, I'm all alone, but I do have a sister. My parents are dead. No, never married. And so after this little bonding moment, you get Arnold goes back to the hotel. And
oh, yeah. Doesn't he write down the keys?
You're right. He does write down the little, like, engraved information on the back side of the key just to be on the safe side, and he goes to his hotel room and puts the key in a light fixture, which across the street is Victor and the clean heads spying on him. And but before they come, Arnold went back to the room, he calls his number because Gina Gershon had been calling him every 10 minutes for the last hour trying to get a hold of him, and she tells him, Victor's doing the drug deal tonight. You have to hurry up. You have to get him. You got to stop him. The drug deal's happening tonight. And Victor goes over, sees the hotel because he stayed there. The guy remembers him. He's like, you want your old room back? And he gets the crap kicked out of him. And he looks down, sees the number of which room Arnold's in, and they go walking off. They're in the hallway. He looks at the clean heads and goes, oh, he's in room 302 when he's actually in room 303.
Yeah, I'm still, even now, I'm still trying to figure out, like, surely you'd want backup when taking Arnie out, but, like...
Well, what he's trying to do is he's trying to get Arnie away from the room so he can get the key. It's a distraction. So, because the guy's busting and there's this woman sitting right there on a bed watching TV... You could hear the shower going, and you see Arnold in the shower, and they're like, where is he at? He's in the bathroom, and the clean heads just open fire on this bathroom, and you see this overweight white guy hit the ground, and Arnold comes out of his room.
I do like how they do, like, set it up where it does seem like Arnie's in there.
Yeah. And it's like Arnie comes running out with this big 44 Magnum and he starts taking out the clean heads. And I'm like, okay, got to remember, this is the 80s. Infinite ammo existed because that gun only holds 6 rounds each. And he never reloads that damn gun. And, he takes out all the clean heads but one, and he's kind of searching. And the woman you find out is a prostitute. And she pulls out a gun and starts shooting the guy, too, to save him. She's like, I have nothing to do with this. I'm sorry. They killed my trick. That's all I have is they killed my John. And
awkward thing, I remember when I was a kid, like when I was like first watching this, I like, you know, when she's watching TV. I remember as a kid, I genuinely thought, because there's that she's watching, like, you know, a Judge Judy-esque show on the TV. I genuinely thought that was her on the screen for, like, when I was a kid. Like, I was generally like, oh yeah, maybe she's just doing that thing where she's like having her like seedy moments, like to, I don't know, relax or something. And I was like, when I was a kid, I was just like, and then like as I got older, I was like, oh no, that's not it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's like you said, it's like, it's Judge Judy, the People's Court or something like that.
Yeah.
And well, Victor breaks into Arnie's room, breaks the light fixture to get the key, and he's like set up. He's like, okay, I'm going to ambush him. Well, there's two. I'm going to be in this one corner facing the two bedroom or the two doors that come into this apartment or a hotel room. Arnold opens one door, nothing happens, and he's sneaking to the other end. Well, throughout the movie, Arnold has an alarm that goes off because his watch is set to Moscow time. And the reason why his shows a little bit more of his humanity is he has a pet parakeet, and it's the timer goes off as his way to remind him how to or when to feed his parakeet. And right as he's sneaking up, this alarm goes off, and the alarm goes off. He jumps out of the way just in the nick of time as bullets start going through the door. And Victor runs down the hallway and jumps out a window and lands in the Chicago River. And I'm like, well, that's a good, you know, perfect spot to land, because otherwise your ass would have been a pancake.
Well, I mean, I don't know, in terms of geography, is the Chicago River like a really long river, or?
Honestly, I know it's like the big river down there in Chicago. I don't know how big it is or how wide it is. I could go, you know, totally geographically incorrect here and be like, kind of how people feel like the Thames River is everywhere in England.
Oh, okay.
it's kind of like that type of, could be how people can do it, when I'm like, no, I know the Thames is in London. I don't think it goes all the way through England, but I'm like, okay, it's that type of feeling.
Oh, okay.
And so Victor gets away, and during a news report, you hear that they found a body in the river, and it was Gina Gershon. And, you know, yeah,
did they ever actually say, like, who killed her? Because obviously, like, they go to the morgue and, like,
it's insinuated that it was Victor, because her neck was broke because she was strangled. They found her in the river, and they insinuated that it was Victor who killed his wife.
Yeah.
So, and Arnold's mad. He's just like, and this is really the part where the commander tells the lieutenant, like, I was wrong about the downside, because we've had murders. We got a dead cop. We got a dead dance instructor. We've drug dealers all over. And he's like, no, you guys, you're done. Just go. And they decide to get a little more information on the key that was stolen. And they happen to go to Art's ex-brother-in-law, who's a locksmith. And during this entire time, Art and his ex-brother-in-law are arguing about his alimony payments. And Arnold's just looking up the key, like, oh, it goes to the lockers at the bus station, this bus station. Okay.
Is it weird that I really found that argument that Jim Belushi had with his ex-brother-in-law kind of quite fascinating, in the sense that, like, it's another thing that kind of shows that Jim Belushi is actually, like, all right, because he's clearly like trying to look out for his sister, because he's like I offered her money not to marry you.
Yep. And it's like, I told her not to marry you. Your last alimony check was in April, and it bounced in July. Yeah. And I was like, oh. And well, they get down to the bus station, and the last of the the Clean Heads is right there, and he's like, okay, we're going to make a lot of money. And Victor actually turns right back around and kills him right there.
Yeah, that's another thing I never quite understood. It's like, is he just, you know, is he being like the stereotypical like greedy drug dealer and like, oh yeah, I'm taking the drugs and the money? Because that was the only thing I could think of.
That's what I thought of when I was like, oh, he's taking the money and the drugs. Gotcha. That's like, I watched this last night, and that's what I thought was going on, was he was just being the stereotypical drug dealing bad guy. And but he shows up talking to this guy who I think they're trying to do like the stereotypical, like, oh, he's the Colombian drug dealer giving them cocaine. And he goes, hey, can you break change? The only thing I got is $100 bill, and it's the other half of the $100 bill.
Because again, it's like, how did he get that? Did like the Clean Heads just like ship it over to, like, you know, send it to him? Or was like, oh, no.
I think what happened was Victor was double dealing, and that's why he killed the Clean Heads. Is he was like, oh, I'm the contact with the drug cartel. Here's that $100 bill, and it was just his like signature way of getting the deal done.
Yeah.
And Arnold busts through a door, has a gun on Victor, and he's like, you're mine. Art comes up, nope, he killed a Chicago cop. Chicago gets him first. And Arnold gets pissed and actually points his gun at Art, and Art's like, come on, you don't want to do this.
Yeah, he's like, what the hell, man? He's like,
yeah, and it's like Victor escapes though with a bus. Basically, like for US listeners, think of like a Greyhound bus type thing. And like, Victor drives off.
Just out of curiosity, are those like universal for like traveling like all across the country?
From what I've seen, they've gotten newer models because this movie is almost 40 years old. So yeah, there's different bus stations you can go to, but that have these buses that you buy a ticket, say in Chicago, and you can buy a ticket to take the bus down to Dallas, Texas, or to Spokane, Washington, for example, and you stay on that bus the entire time. And so he jumps onto a bus that's supposed to go to Montreal, and I didn't notice that. And he's driving and trying to escape, and Art and Arnold jump into their own bus that was going to St. Louis, I believe, and they're chasing after him. And it's this whole like bus chase, and Jim Belushi just goes, where'd you learn to drive a bus? In Kiev, in the army? Yes. They're just driving and chasing after him, and Victor turns around and they decide to play chicken with the buses.
This is no game. It's like, no shit. Yeah,
they're not going to stop, and Art forces Arnold to swerve out of the way, which causes their bus to flip, and Arnold's yelling out in Russian, idiot! Idiot! You could have killed on the.
Yeah,
he's like, you could have killed us, but we would have killed Victor too. And they look over, and his bus gets hit by a train. And he's like, well, I know.
Well, how did he survive that? I mean,
exactly. I'm just saying, there's been some, you know, miracles where people have been hit by trains, and just because of how much of the car was or a vehicle was hit, that they were severely injured but didn't die.
I guess it because like when you're watching it, I guess it was where the driver part of the coach was already sort of like over the line, so like the train kind of hit the middle of the bus. So it's like, mm-hmm. I guess it's probably because obviously if it was like head on, most likely wouldn't.
Yeah, it's like another factor of was how fast the train was going. Could have just done a bunch of damage to it. And if it would have gone full speed, that bus would have been cut in half.
Yeah.
I weirdly enough, I know this because my dad was a train conductor for a couple years. So he'd tell us like, oh, yeah, never do. Or it's like, especially on a train, if your car breaks down on train tracks, get the hell out of that car. Your car's got insurance. Just go. And And he's like, and if you're driving and that happens, you see the train and your car breaks down and you got to get out of that car, just run towards the train because you're most likely not going to get hit by the debris. And so Victor kills the train conductor and he's just sitting there staring off at Arnold, and Jim Belushi and Arnold are walking up, and Jim Belushi's like, go do what you need to do. It's all Russian to me. And
yeah, he's like, oh yeah, have you got enough ammo? He's like, yeah, he's got enough ammo, which he, again, like you said, I don't think he's ever reloaded that gun at all.
Well, he checked it once, but he never physically put rounds in it after he checked it. And he puts the cylinders back into the gun, walks up, shoots Victor. Jim Belushi comes right up to him and goes, hey, did you get him? I'm like, well, no shit, he got him. He just put six rounds of a 44 Magnum into the guy. The guy's on the ground. And he's like, nice grouping. Thank you. You're welcome. I still like the Soviet model better, and walks off.
I'm not going to lie. I remember the first time I watched this, I genuinely thought there was going to be, you know, like one of those stereotypical fake outs where, like, Victor was going to get up again. It's like, ah, and he's going to try and, like, yep, shoot again. And, like, he, like, either Arnie was going to shoot him again or Jim Belushi was going to shoot him. But I genuinely thought
they both would have just opened fired and just unloaded. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of expected that myself, too.
It just seemed like one of those like movies that they would do it, but yeah, it's like, but I guess like you said, it's, you know, six rounds of a 44 Magnum in your chest is like,
oh yeah, it, I knew a buddy who had a 44 Magnum, and he was like, yeah, I'm gonna go hunting. This is just in case if a bear shows up. This is gonna help me stop a bear. So I'm like, if that round could stop a bear, it could probably put down a human fairly well.
Yeah,
and and then we get the scene, Art and Arnold's right there at the airport talking to each other. And Arnold's like, well, it's custom for us in the Soviet Union to give gifts to people. And I've decided to give you my watch. And Art's like, you know what? Yeah. Takes off his watch, gives it to Arnold. And he's like, yeah, that's a $1,000 American made watch. And you just gave me $28 East German watch. Okay. And he's like, whatever.
Is his watch supposed to be a Rolex?
I think that's what they're trying to insinuate, like, oh, he's got a Rolex, which I'm like, how in the hell would a Chicago police officer have a Rolex?
Well, you said he got it on discount from somewhere.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah, he's like, yeah, I got it on discount, but it's $1,000 watch. But so they exchange watches and they're about ready to leave, and Arnold looks at him and goes, all right, we're policemen, not politicians. It's okay for us to like each other. And they just, that's where they leave. And you see Arnold standing in Red Square saluting. And he like instantly walks off frame of camera. And you see all the people in the background in Red Square. That's the scene where they did not have permission to film. That's why, you know, Arnold disappears real quickly, because if any actual military or law enforcement would have been there, they would have been like, where's your paperwork? Oh, you're arrested for, you know, impersonating an officer.
Oh, that's insane.
So, all right. But out of this movie, Alex, out of 5 stars, what would you give this movie?
This has always put me on the spot. I think I'd give it a solid 3.5. It's definitely one of my more enjoyable buddy cop movies. And in terms of like Arnie movies, it's probably, honestly, I'll probably give it like, well, in terms of Arnie movies, I'll probably give it like a solid like B plus. It's not a classic, but it's definitely sort of like one that, you know, I like to watch when I'm in the mood. So yeah, 3.5, I'd say is pretty good. Ranking.
Yeah, it's I'd say for me it's like, because I do remember the back half of the movie and not the beginning half from when I saw it, because me personally, the first half of the movie kind of bored me, but the second half, that's what made it up for me. So I'd give it, you know, 2.5, 3 out of 5 myself. out of the Arnold movies, it's on the lower end for me. I have other movies I would of his I would prefer to watch. It's like the choice was between Red Heat, True Lies, and Conan the Barbarian. I think I'd pick Red Heat at the end of those three.
Oh yeah, that's definitely the case. But I think I'd put it above. For me anyway, I put it above Raw Deal and probably his later era stuff.
Yeah, I'll put it above Raw Deal, and last movie of his I saw him in was Killing Gunther. It was like he played like this international assassin hitman, and another one wants to be the best and decides to gather up a team of hitmen to take out this legendary hitman. And it wasn't a very good movie, in my opinion. Arnold was hilarious in it, but the rest of the film was in my opinion.
I think the last one I saw was, I think it was The Last Stand, which was fine. It was enjoyable, but I wouldn't say it was sort of like, oh yeah, I really, because I've been doing a thing where I've been buying all of his movies pretty much, and I've decided to essentially stop at the early 2000s. Like, I'm a bit sad, and I've got Terminator Genisys in there as well. Don't ask me why I have that one, but apart from that one, the latest movie I've got in my collection is the Sixth Day. So I've basically got From the Sixth Day and back, and minus sort of like the franchise movies, so like the Terminators and the Conans. It's like Sixth Day is sort of like the latest one I've got to in terms of my collection.
Off the top of my head, I'd say The Last Stand was the last one of his besides his franchise ones, because I do have Terminator Genisys. I have Terminator Dark Fate, which I think Dark Fate got too much heat. I enjoyed the hell out of it myself. Genisys was kind of a weird one, but you know, cool concepts. I know they were trying to reboot the franchise with that one.
I'm more inclined to give Genisys like some slack, because I liked the first half. I liked the idea of it's Terminator 1, but slightly different sort of thing. And yeah. I felt that it's really weird. I feel Dark Fate was taking bits from all the previous Terminator movies, but just not doing them as well as that. And considering the latter era Terminator movies were already sort of like not great to begin with, it just seemed like, oh, so you're doing a shoddy imitation of something that was already a bit shoddily implemented. So it's like, do I really need this in my collection? It's like, yeah.
I think with that, they tried to do the whole like Halloween 2018 where, oh, the first two existed, but anything after did not.
Yeah.
Basically.
And to big myself up and promote myself a little bit, I've made a video talking about what's the third best Terminator movie, and spoilers for me, it's always been Salvation, because Salvation is the only Terminator movie out of all the sequels that doesn't involve time travel, it's set fully in the future, and doesn't rely on Arnie as a sort of selling point. Yeah, there's that weird CGI cameo of him in the movie, but it wasn't like promoted in all the advertising and stuff. It was sort of like more of an Easter egg than anything else, which for me shows that the potential of what they could have done with Salvation. Like, yeah, the execution wasn't like brilliant, but like, to me, it was still a solid concept.
Oh yeah, it was a solid concept. I think some people just got turned off by the whole Christian Bale drama that happened on set with that movie, or how the whole original concept of the movie was supposed to be rated R, but when it came out theatrically, it was PG-13 here in the U.S., and the only way for you to see the rated R bits was to get the home media version of it.
Yeah, because for us, it's a
12, and the other movies are 15, so
I think that another instance was it's never a good thing, especially with U.S. here in the U.S. like action fans, some of them are like, oh, you take a rated R franchise and you make it, or for you, the 15 rating or higher, and you bring it down to a lower rating. Oh, it's not going to be as good as the other one, or it's not what other people are expecting type thing. So it kind of had that going against it too. And you just had all sorts of different people going, Arnold's not in it, it's not going to be the same. I enjoyed it. I've learned to, compartmentalize different things. I'm one of the few people who probably enjoyed the Conan the Barbarian remake with Jason Momoa. He did a great job in that.
I've got it on my shelf. I still haven't watched it. I bought it for £1 from one of the sort of like secondhand shops over here. And I remember I was telling a friend of mine, oh yeah, I bought the Jason Momoa Conan movie. He was like, dude, it sucks. And it was like, I still haven't watched it yet. And I'm just like,
Well, my big criticism of the movie is, I know the character in the books and the short stories has a lot of different things, and they tried to cram different versions of Conan into that one movie.
Oh, so they're trying to do like several different versions of it in that's never a good thing.
Oh, it's Conan the Barbarian, and oh, here's Conan as when he was a pirate, or they do kind of like the drinking tavern scene type thing, but they don't do like the Wheel of Pain where Conan's the only one left to do turn that wheel. They're like, oh, he was a slave and now he frees slaves. He's a pirate, or he's a raider. He's all this stuff. Like, they just try throwing too much of Conan from the books instead of focusing mainly on the story, in my opinion. I enjoyed that. Like, I'm one of those ones who's gonna probably, listeners are gonna hear this and they're gonna show me so much hate, is I actually enjoy the Halo TV show for what it is, because I know it doesn't take place in the video game universe or the books or the web series they did that turned into movies. I'm just like, okay, I enjoy it for what it is. And I know that show, for example, is getting so much hate at the moment from the fans, but I'm like, I've learned to compartmentalize it. I'm like, okay, it's not like the video games, it's not like the books, it's not like the other stuff that came in the past. And this is
fair. I'm similar to that with have you ever watched the Troy movie with Brad Pitt in it?
Yes.
I'm a big Greek mythology fan, and I remember watching it, and the first time I watched it, I was literally picking apart everything that was wrong with it, because there's so much wrong with it. And I remember I got my dad to watch it, and my dad knows way more. He was the one that got me into Greek mythology, and he's like even more into it. He was literally he was like frothing at the mouth, and like, oh, this is wrong, this is wrong. It was like, oh my god, why are you making me watch this? I was like,
but yeah, because I'm like, the Trojan War took what, 7 years to fight, and the movie made it seem like it was just a few months.
Yeah, it was like, it was 10 years, and all the interesting stuff happened in the last year.
And they just threw it all in that one movie.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And they didn't really talk about the, because obviously there's also the Greek gods are also like a key component of it, because the gods have picked sides in the war as well.
Yeah,
they will help out like certain warriors, and they scaled that back. And they also kind of they took out all the sort of like mythological stuff as well. So they're trying to make it sort of like realistic. I mean, again, and even with all the changes and stuff they made, I still really enjoy the movie.
Yeah, it's you know, you have to set aside things like that. If you know the background of it, you got to set aside like I will say the last movie I went to theatrically here in the U.S. was Uncharted. I took my son opening day to go see it, and it cost me almost $40 for just the tickets alone. Because we ended up going to like a Dolby surround sound theater, and I didn't know that. But I liked how they took elements of the game and they just threw it in here. But there were certain things I'm like, you know, they could have done better or done without some things. But I'm like, you know what? If you don't compare it to the games with that history and that background, you know, you're not, it's an enjoyable movie. And I know it took forever for them to get that movie off the ground, from when they originally cast Mark Wahlberg to play Nathan Drake to where he ended up being Sully. And
I think that just goes to show how long it's been in development. Hell, hasn't it? It's like, okay, we're going to have you as this guy, but you've aged out of that now, so you're going to be the mentor.
Yeah, it's like, because like leading up to that movie, because I was on vacation that week from my old job, and I had played Uncharted 1-3 leading up to that movie, and my son would watch me play the game, or the kids would watch me play that game, and they were getting into it. So I'm like, I had fun with it, but I'm like, okay, you just gotta, certain things you gotta let go of what you know, because they're trying to establish its own form of media here. And but it's like, we're gonna get back on track here. So Alex, if people want to hit you up, where can they find you?
Well, I have a YouTube channel called Optional Side Quest, where I talk about movies, music, video games, and essentially whatever really takes my fancy. I do lists, I do sort of like think pieces. I'm on Instagram as Alex SideQuest, and I'm on Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called nowadays, as Alex SideQuest as well, where I occasionally post.
Yeah, it's let's see, it's been a while, but I do have a link tree, everybody. I still have it. It's you can find all my social media, my past guests. I will be updating it and putting Alex on it as well. You can find me at link.tr.ee underscore, like I said, it's, sorry, I'm trying to load it up. It's / Shane, Shane Logans, Logginns, where you can see all like past guests, their social media. I'll be updating and putting Alex's YouTube channel up there, his Twitter and X. If you guys happen to be a part of the GameZilla Media Network's Discord, you can find both Alex and I on there, and you can hit us up. That's how me and him got connected.
I tend to post random memes in the meme section.
Well, I don't know if you've seen it, like when Hovercraft Joe and LPJ are talking about stuff. They're like, oh, this crazy gun, and like I do the audio notes and going, okay. I've basically become the unofficial gun guy for the GameZilla Media Network.
Well, I was going to say, it's like, throughout this episode, you have been the gun guy. So when they actually say, it's like, oh yeah, we've got a gun guy, it's like, it makes sense that it's you.
Yep, it's Yep, grew around, up around the military. Like I said, I have friends in law enforcement. In the U.S., I own guns. I am a Second Amendment guy. I was raised down in Texas, which is one of the gun capitals here in the U.S.
How much is the stereotype of, you know, the Stetson and the cowboy boots? Is that, like, proper stereotypical, or is that, like...
I went to go, it's like, well, it's like fans would have heard from the past, my ex-fiance and I, we just split up last April, and an ex-girlfriend and I, we'd actually reconnected, and she lives down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Texas, and I'm living up here in Spokane, Washington. Last August, I went to go visit her. I am even with like a couple inches of snow on the ground here in Spokane, I completely forgot we had snow because I have blackout curtains on my apartment window. I went out there with my cowboy boots that I got down there, and hanging on my door from my bedroom is my Stetson cowboy hat. That's the same color as Raylan Givens' hat from Justified.
You got me to start watching that as well, to be fair.
Good show. It's a really good show. My opinion, I think season 2 was the best season of that show, when they threw in blood feuds and stuff like that. But the color hat that Raylan Givens has, that's the color hat I have for my Stetson, which is actually, the stereotype is true. The Stetson hat is very popular down in Texas. It's actually the brand of hat that the law enforcement agency, the Texas Rangers, use. I actually, while doing at the Fort Worth Stockyards, everybody, I'll talk about my little vacation there. I got to see an old West gun show where they fired blanks and guns. And it made me jump because I was 5 feet away from me, and the guy warned my girlfriend that he was doing it, so she covered her ears. I didn't get that warning, so I jumped from the shot of the gun, and walking around there, seeing guys with guns on their hips, and like Spokane, Washington, it's, they're trying to be more like you guys over there in the UK and try to do more gun control. Like if you want to buy a gun now, you have to have background check. Or you have to pay for your own background check to get it. You have to have a safety course that's recognized by the state. And every firearm, you have a 10-day wait period. Where I know in Texas, if you go down in Texas and you show a Texas ID, all it's going to take is for the background check. You can walk out same day. So, and where everybody's like, oh, the stereotype of you can get anything down in Texas. You got to have licenses to get certain weapons down there. You can't just go, I'm going to buy an automatic AK-47 down there. No, that's not how it works, people. You got to have special licenses. But, you know, Alex, this was great. I'm going to extend an open invitation. If there's any movie you want to talk about, you are more than welcome, my friend, to join me or go, hey, what about this movie? I will be posting episodes a bit more sporadically. I do have interviews that I'm trying to set up with local wrestling stars here in the local independent scene here in Spokane, Washington. I have team ups with past guests and future other podcast guests.
This is a really random question, and it seems highly unlikely, but have you met any of the guys from, like, you know, like the early, like, 90s music scene and stuff? Because I'm a massive, like, grunge fan, so it's like oh yeah, you know, it'd be really cool. It's like, if
you're talking about grunge, that'd be more like Seattle based people, and that's literally on the other side of the state of Washington. That's Seattle is a good 6-hour drive from Spokane.
You know, that's crazy, man, because like 6 hours for like a 6-hour drive for me would, like, I could literally get to Scotland from like where I am. I've been like in a different country for a 6-hour drive. It's just, that's insane. Well,
Let's just say, for example, in Texas, you could start at one end of Texas, and if you're driving, it's going to be about 3, maybe 4 days, because it's the second largest state in our country. Like I went when I was down there on my vacation, I went to go see family that I hadn't seen in 30 years. And yeah, and my girlfriend and I
think like you could drive to France like in 3-4 days, and probably further to be honest. But like that's insane.
To give a little bit more of my history, it's like my dad's retired military. We were stationed at Ramstein, Germany. And we were stationed there, and I was on the track team. We drove from Ramstein and took the channel to get to Alconbury, England. And we drove all the way through France. We did like one stop in France, but we were like a good 6 to 8 hour drive just to get to. All right. It's like the channel took us like an hour to be on the English channel there to get into England. And then it was like another hour to get to where we were supposed to be for a track meet. But the majority of the time we were in France, and we were stuck on that bus for going through France. So it was kind of crazy.
That's insane.
It's and like quite literally, I have friends and family in Texas. Like when I was like, hey, I'd forgotten about how big Texas was until I was down there. Like, I'm going to be in Dallas. Well, I'm in El Paso. That's 6 hours away. Oh, I'm in San Antonio. That's 8 hours away. So, that's right.
I had a friend, he had something similar happen to him because he lives in the south of France. He lives in Toulouse. And he said he's had friends ask, say, it's like, oh yeah, I'm in Paris. It's like, we should like hang out. It's like, yeah, I'm in like, that's, you know, a good couple of hours away from where I am. It's like, if you're only here for like a day, there's no point in me like coming to see you. Cause it's like, by the time I get there, you'll be like, it'll be time to go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Like I had a buddy who's in El Paso, Texas during the height of Twilight Mania. Was, oh, are you anywhere near Forks, Washington? Dude, that's near Seattle. And that's a good 7 hours away. And he was like, oh wow, I didn't realize it was that far. Like my girlfriend was nice enough to come visit me for my 40th birthday, and her mom was like, oh, you guys can go to Snoqualmie and take a look around. And I told her, my girlfriend was like, your mom does realize Snoqualmie is a good 5 hours away, right? And she was like, I don't think she realized that, but it's okay. But like I said, Alex, you are more than welcome to come on this show again. You can hit me up on the Discord. I know you can hit Alex up on the Discord as well for Gamezilla Media. I'm in negotiations right now. It's going to take a little bit to get LPJ and Hovercraft Joe from Last Action Podcast on here. I have, like I said, I got former guests who are going to be coming back. I have interviews coming up for the fans of the show. I had a blast. Alex, thank you for doing this. And I know it's now late for you. It's 10 p.m. your time there when it's 2 p.m. my time. So
yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, I've still got about half an hour to an hour before I think about going to bed. But, you know, it's all good.
But yeah, it's like, I appreciate this. Thank you for bringing this movie, because I, like I said, I originally thought I knew this movie, but only I knew the back end, the back half. And I, you know, I just want to tell my friends, yes, or my fans, not my, well, friends as well. But yes, I'm back. The Action Nerd Podcast, Dudes Being Dudes Talking About Movies, is back. I'm going to try to be doing the whole weekly episode thing, but for right now, it's going to be every other week. That's the best I can do. I do have some personal life matters going on, which is making things a little tough, but I'm going to be doing the show more regularly. Like I said, I got interviews planned. There's going to be local wrestlers. I have, it's like I got podcast hosts from other shows who are willing to help out on this. And you know what? If you guys want to hit me up, go to the actionnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Shoot me an email there, and we'll see if you get. It's like if you're a fan and you want to be a guest, we'll try to get you on the show. So, but Alex, I had a blast. Thank you so much, man.
So good.
I'll
man.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, it's like we need to do this again.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Cool, man. See you in a bit.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.